All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namah Om Shabdana. Krishna Prasadam Tula Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Vishnami Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nirmise Sasunivadi Paskachari Sitarani Mande Ham Sri Guru Sri Tapad Bhagavan Sri Guru Vashnavashtra Shri Rupam, Sakrajatam, Sakhtam, Arganatam, Vitam, Samsajivam, Sadvaitam, Sadvitam, Vajjana, Sahitam, Krishna, Chaitanya, Devam, Shri Radha, Krishna, Panam, Sahagana, Lavita, Shri Vishakam, 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 Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's August 2nd, 2029, Hillsboro, North Carolina, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 27, Text 16. This is Krishna responding to Indra's prayers. Mama Sharya Shimadando,
Mama Sharya Shimadando,
Danda Pani Napasyati, Tamram, Tamram Sayami Sampadyo, Yasya Chaitam Yanugraham. Me, Aishwarya, of his power, Shri, and opulence, Mada, by the intoxication, Anda, rendered blind, Danda, the rod of punishment, Pani, in my hand, Napasyati, one does not see, Tam, him, Brahmashayami, I made fall, Sampadya, from his material assets, Yasya, for whom, Cha, and Ichami, I desire, Anugraham, benefit. BBT translation. A man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby, with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. Purport. One may argue, God should desire everyone's real welfare. Therefore, why should Lord Krishna state in this verse that he removes the intoxicating opulence of one who is about to receive his mercy, rather than simply stating that he will remove everyone's opulence and bless everyone? On the other hand, we may point out that irrevocable death occurs for everyone, unless Lord Krishna does take away everyone's opulence and everyone's false pride. However, if we apply the Lord's statement to events within one's immediate life before death, we may refer to Krishna's statement in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, as people surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Lord Krishna desires everyone's welfare, but when he says here, yes, yeah, Chaitanya Manugraham, for one whose welfare I desire, it is understood that the Lord refers to those who by their own activities and thoughts have manifested a desire to achieve spiritual benefit. Lord Krishna wants everyone to be happy in Krishna consciousness, but when he sees that a specific person also desires spiritual happiness, the Lord especially desires it for that person. This is a natural act of reciprocation consistent with the Lord's statement, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, I am equal in my attitude to all human beings. Bhagavad Gita 9:29. Okay, and I'd like to. Read from Krishna book. Prabhupada writes, you should always remember that all your material opulences are due to my mercy. No living entity can independently become opulent. One must be favored by my mercy. Everyone should always remember that I am the Supreme Lord. I can show anyone my favor and I can chastise anyone because no one is superior to me. If I find someone overpowered by false pride, in order to show him my causeless mercy, I withdraw all his opulences. It is noteworthy that Krishna sometimes removes all the rich man's opulences in order to facilitate his becoming a soul surrendered to him. This is a special favor of the Lord's. Sometimes it is seen that a person is very opulent materially, but due to his devotional service to the Lord, he may be reduced to poverty. One should not think, however, that because he worshipped the Supreme Lord, he became poverty-stricken. The real purport is that when a person is a pure devotee, but at the same time, by miscalculation, wants to lord it over material nature. That's a very interesting statement. Let me read that again. The real purport is that when a person is a pure devotee, but at the same time, by miscalculation, wants to lord it over material nature. The Lord shows his special mercy by taking away all material opulences until at last he surrenders unto the Supreme Lord. And we're going to read Jiva Goswami's Tika. Otherwise you would go astray, since you became devoid of unlimited knowledge or blind by intoxication with power and wealth. Such a person does not see me with a cow stick in my hand. So he's understanding danda is not like this, you know, rod of punishment, but a cow stick for the worshippers of Krishna. Or he does not realize me with the stick of punishment in my hand for people like you. So for those who worship Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna is saying, if you become, according to Jiva Goswami, if you become mad with your opulence, you stop seeing Krishna with his cow stick. And if you're a Satkama devotee like Indra, if you become mad with opulence, you stop seeing Krishna as the punisher. Going on. Speaking of his lordship in cowherd pastimes, he teaches bhakti found in the internal associates such as Nanda. Since the proud person does not see this, I desire to give him mercy. Thus I take away his wealth, which causes his power. But seeing that this would be intolerable to you, I do not do this. Instead, I only destroy your sacrifice. Mama Aishwarya Shima Dando Dandapani Nabasiti Tam Ram Shayami Sampad Bhyo Yasya Chaitam in Ram. A man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. So these sort of verses, oh wait, these verses are very frightening. Yeah? Whenever I read them, I become frightened. It's like, oh no, Krishna knows that I'm proud and arrogant and envious and demoniac. He's going to take everything away. He's going to leave me as, you know, a homeless, unloved person eating out of the dumpster and dying in the gutter. And then I'll think about some devotee that I know that, you know, was put into some really difficult situation, and I think, wow, oh, Krishna did it to them, he'll do it to me. You know, Krishna, don't hurt me, don't hurt me, please don't hurt me. We become frightened. And the other day, a devotee was contacting me and told me about all these reverses that he had in his life. You know, why did Krishna give me all these reverses? Why did Krishna give me all these problems? And so this is our nature, in that, you know, we want to, we say, okay, death, I know you're going to take everything away. But like you read in the purport, BBT purport, you know, at least train this life, you know, give me all the opulences of the world. And people generally pray to God like that. That is generally what motivates people to be religious. I remember my stepmother saying to me, why should I bother to be religious? Religious people suffer as much as anybody else. What's the point? And so people generally are religious like that. And that's how they get faith. And Prabhupada tells the story of the women, the German women in World War II, who lost their faith because they had prayed for the men in their lives to come back safely. And when they did, they said, there's no coming. Right? The very famous writer, Elie Wiesel, who at 15 in Hungary, near the end of the war, was captured and his family was taken to Auschwitz. And he saw his mother and sisters. First, as soon as they arrived there at night, there was this pit of fire, and he saw his mother and sisters thrown alive into the pit of fire. And he had been very religious, a young man, and after that he became an atheist. You know, he said, what is the point of worshiping God if such terrible things can happen? So this is it's a very deep fear and concern. You know, will God take away everything? And of course, people avoid becoming religious because they think if I become religious, God may take everything away. Or they become religious for the purpose that maybe God won't take everything. You know, they bargain that if I follow my vows and I pray to you and I'm a good, righteous person, then you'll reward me in this world. It's a mercantile exchange, which is what we'll be in chapter 32 of the 10th canto. The Krishna says to the gopis that those who have a mercantile exchange, there's actually no dharma, there's no prema, there's not even any friendship. And have we noticed that we've had a relationship with someone who's always keeping score? What have you done for me? I've done so much for you, and you haven't done anything for me. Have you ever had that kind of exchange with somebody? And the mood is not loving or friendly, is it, in that kind of a exchange? It's antagonistic. And this is our, today, materialistic mentality. As we make a list of everything we've done and all of our self-sacrifices, and then we say, what have you done? Prabhupada talks about this, that when a man wants to take sannyas, he says, all right, I've served the family for so many years, it's time for me to take sannyas. And the wife will say, what have you done? You haven't done anything. And Prabhupada often used the example of Gandhi, where, some citizen of India killed him, although he had dedicated his life to serving his country. So we find this, isn't it? Yes? And so we try to do this with God. We try to give God a list. And I certainly am guilty of this. Well, I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this. So you owe me. You owe me a good life in this world. So these kind of verses are very frightening. And then with that, it's not that we want to know why, like this devotee pumped that, why do these verses happen? I find it interesting that Krishna is telling Indra why. He's saying, this is why. And the essence of the why is because I love you. That's the essence of. Why do good things happen to us? Because Krishna loves us. Why do bad things happen to us? Because Krishna loves us. And the scripture does cover us as our conception of good and bad is all rubbish. Our idea of what is good and what is bad is very distorted. That there are psychological studies that show that we are much more worried about losing something then we are inclined to gain something. We've already kind of said, if we have the opportunity of possibly gaining something, but to gain that something, we have to lose something. Even if what we have to gain is double or triple what we're going to lose, our tendency is to hold on to what we already have, rather than to risk losing something that we have to gain something better. Very robust studies on the psychology. And this is what's also operating between the conditioned soul and God. I don't have much. The comparison is a drop of water in the desert. If we think about the material pleasures we have, I'm thinking of what material pleasures do I have? Nice, tasty food. a comfortable chair. I mean, what are we thinking about material pleasure? You know, some little baby who says, "Hi, grand." I mean, this is my idea of material pleasure, and I'm unwilling to give that up for unlimited eternal bliss. So that's the. And whether, you have a nice piece of pizza or whether you're in charge of the heavenly kingdom, it's basically the same thing. So here, Krishna's explaining that he takes things away, and there's things. Well, I mean, here he's talking about taking things away, but giving and taking, according to what will help us advance in Krishna consciousness. Now, we could say, well, Krishna's giving and taking to everyone. This is one of the points in the BBT group report. But not directly, it's indirectly. People are getting and losing according to their karma, which you could do. It is a mercantile exchange. You do pious activities, you get good things, you do sinful activities, you get bad things, and by the way, the good doesn't cancel out the bad, like you see with King Riga. And that's for the ultimate benefit of the living entity, this karmic thing. But it's not for the immediate, real benefit of the living. There's not any, the law of karma, it has the ultimate purpose of purification. But on an immediate basis, it doesn't. It's just like a hamster wheel. Right? As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you go to the heavenly planets, you go down to the earth planet, you go to the you're not really progressing. And whatever you get, you had to pay for it in equal measure. So by the law of karma, whatever opulence you get, you have to suffer in some way to achieve it. Of course, people become very proud of the suffering that they did to achieve their opulence. I worked hard and sacrificed, for 20 years to get this house. or to get this job, this title. People get very proud of their suffering. It's quite interesting, actually. I see this in Bhakti, even people are very proud of their tapasya. I've been on a Sankirtan bus for 10 years and bathed outside and sacrifice my home. I remember I was teaching at the Manashiksha company yesterday. When I was teaching Manashiksha, especially verses 6 and 7, because verse 6 is about how we disguise our inertness as bhakti, and 7 is about our pride in our bhakti, our pride in our righteousness, and how we have to remove those. Sometimes, not always or often, but sometimes after the class, somebody would argue with me about how we didn't really have to remove those, that doing the externals was enough. And inevitably, those people would give me a litany of all of their austerities and all of their sacrifices for Krishna externally. It was quite humorous, actually. It was sad, but it was also humorous. So anyway, karma is like that. You work hard for something and you get it, and it's equal. Whatever you get, you suffer for. So there's no net gain. And working in the law of karma, you can't cause anyone's net gain. If I'm working within the law of karma and I want to do good for you, I'm only allowed to do the good for you that you've paid for. I can't do good for you that you haven't paid for. I can't do bad for you that you haven't paid for either. So there's never a net gain. Everything just goes right back to zero. There's no actual win. It's all an illusion. So here we're talking about Krishna giving something beyond that, something unearned. That's why it's called causeless mercy. It doesn't have a cause other than the Lord's compassion and the devotee's compassion. We actually can't earn bhakti. I mean, this morning I was hearing Prabhupada saying that Krishna will reveal himself to you according to your austerity. But austerity is not a payment. It's not like a vending machine. And it's not like karma. It's actually one of the offenses on chanting to see bhakti as a mechanical arrangement. Because Prabhupada was also saying that the austerity wasn't worth anything unless there was love. That what Krishna is really reciprocating with his love, and our austerity is a way of demonstrating our love. That's all. Like I said in the surport, Krishna is reciprocating according to our desire to want spiritual life. So then we are talking about a net gain. We really are. We're talking about something undeserved, unpaid for, that cannot be paid for or deserved in a material sense. It's not possible. It's just a favor that the Lord is doing for one, out of compassion. You know, all of us have karma that are going to entangle us for an unlimited amount of time, because as soon as we pay off one karma in that process, we accrue more. Yeah? How do we ever get out? We don't have a way of getting out. So it has to be mercy. And Krishna's giving or taking away according to what will bring us to that ultimate unlimited happiness and the ultimate freedom of suffering. And giving or taking away is really, it's very superficial. Because everything Krishna's doing is giving. You know, we can see this with a parent and child. Sometimes the parent gives the child a toy, and at another point the parent may take away the very same toy. But in either case, the motive is giving. Like Padma and I took the boys to the lake at the quarry a couple of days ago. So we bring them to the lake, and then we bring them home from the lake. Right? And when we were leaving, Swami Manu was saying he didn't want to leave. He wanted to stay. But of course, if we stay, what were we going to do? Sleep there at the lake in a tent? You know, what were we going to do? We had to go home so he could have his nice bed and not be bitten by mosquitoes at night. So bringing him there was loving, and bringing him back from there was loving. Both of them were giving, but from his perspective, one was giving and one was taking. Does that make sense to everybody? You know, he saw it like that. But both of them were actually giving. So Krishna is saying, oh, you want something beyond karma. You want me. You want real love. You want something beyond your mercantile experience. Okay, I'll facilitate you in doing that. And if we're open and receptive, we see this in our lives. I've seen this in my life, that when Krishna's apparently giving me something, it was for my benefit. And when Krishna was apparently taking something, it was for my benefit. And sometimes you can't see it in the moment. Sometimes in the moment, it doesn't make any sense to us. But sometimes you get some distance from it, and you see, oh, this taking was also a giving. The giving was the giving. The taking, does everyone have this experience? You know, Krishna takes away a service, or he takes away a home, or he takes away money, or he takes away a relationship, or he takes away some ability. But if you find that, oh, that was a blessing, had I kept that thing, it would have caused me nothing but trouble. You know, I remember many years ago, when I lived here previously, so you may be aware that I lost a child. And I was grieving for quite some time. And it was interesting. I used to correspond with a devotee in Navadvipa that they call Prabhupada's astrologer. And I wrote to him asking about our plans to publish a Bhagavad Gita book, which is now on sale in the hall, and some other projects. And he was very encouraging. I didn't tell him about the child, but he just simply wrote, this was Krishna's mercy, because had the child lived, he would have experienced severe difficulties in life. And then immediately I felt peaceful. I just thought, oh, actually Krishna saved all of us from some very difficult situation. And me, it was just all the grief and anxiety that I had for about 2 months. Just, I felt like I was washed with peace. And so it's like that. Everything is actually beneficial. I mean, a few months ago, a devotee was called me and asked me for advice that she'd gone through some really horrific medical situation. After having done everything right and taking care of herself, all the right plans, all the right everything, it didn't work. And she said to me, what was the purpose of going through this? And I said, well, I don't know the specific purpose. I said, that Krishna will reveal to you eventually, either in this life or when you're out of this body. But the ultimate purpose is definitely love. Now, but Krishna also takes away, as Jiva Goswami is saying, according to our capacity to handle it. And he gives according to our, you know, we can understand this with giving. Just like Sunama Ramana, after he left the Orca with apparently nothing. That's also interesting, how he left Orca with apparently nothing. And he said, well, Krishna was very wise. He was very wise. He knew I couldn't handle it. He knew that if I got opulence, I would become bewildered. Now, what's interesting is the Acharyas say that Sudama was attached to his renunciation. That's also one of the six opulences, by the way, is Vairagya. You know, Vairagya is a mysterious opulence. It's a very mysterious, most mysterious of the six opulences. Because all the other opulences can be very, very easily taken away in a moment. You know, maybe you just get a bad disease or a car accident or just hang around for a while. Somebody was looking at old pictures of me and like, beauty is that everybody loses that for hanging around longer. And wealth is pretty easy to lose, a stock market crash, right? And a devoted friend in 2008 who said, I've lost all my wealth. Or a thief or whatever, you know, fire. Aishwarya, whatever, Aishwarya. Aishwarya also means Ishwara, the power to control others. And then others just say, you know, we don't want to be controlled by you anymore, you know, there's a revolt against the dictator or whatever. Or fame. And with the internet now, you can lose your fame in 10 billionths of a second. All these things can be taken away by others. Vairagya, we tend to think of something that can't be taken away by others. How can anyone else take away my renunciation? And also, renunciation doesn't seem like an opulence. This once meeting with Radhanath Swami in Chalpati, and some person came in and said, you know, would you like me to donate some chairs for you? And Radhanath Swami said, don't take away my opulence if I'm not yet. Very interesting. But Sudama Brahma was attached. What can you become attached to Radhanath also? I am very renounced. I am very austere. But anyway, Sudama Brahma was thinking like that. Krishna doesn't trust me with wealth. Although Krishna did not really trust in him, but Krishna kind of forced it on him. Here, wealth, management. And we see that in our Krishna movement, where many of our renunciates have to manage large amounts of wealth and people. Shiva Ramaswamy was told, and he said, you know, I gave up my wife, I gave up my career, took sannyas, and then I'm having to manage so many women and so many children and so many houses and so much property. He said, it's just a burden for me. It's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to just live as a simple renunciate. He said, my solace is that I have the service of Radhasham, the service of Srila Prabhupada. Right? But anyway, this the Krishna won't give more than we can handle. And he won't take away more than we can handle, so Jiva Goswami said. I always find this pastime fascinating that Krishna does not take away Indra's position. And as I've said so many times, we in this time definitely have taken away his position. There's no question about it. And if we didn't, there'd be a huge outcry over the internet. How dare you let Indra stay as the king of heaven after everything he's done? But if I wouldn't regularly do that, I mean, I remember seeing it with Detroit, and this devotee Govardhan was the temple president, and he would never come to the morning program, and he said he was never changing his rounds, and he wasn't studying Prabhupada's books. So the devotees threw him out, they reinstated somebody else. And Prabhupada said, no, and he put Govardhan back. Of course, Govardhan didn't last very long. He ended up leaving on his own accord. But Prabhupada would do that. And he did that with devotees. Govindadasi Tasa, one of the devotees, had stolen thousands of dollars from the Hawaiian temple. They had taken the life membership donation that Peter Burwash had given. Peter Burwash, and this is also interesting, Peter Burwash complained to Prabhupada about it. And Prabhupada said, don't hate the agent of your karma. And Prabhupada was furious at that. I mean, he was absolutely furious at that, for stealing the temple's money and so forth. And at a certain point, he said to them, look, just come back. Just come back and take up Krishna consciousness again. You know, so generally Prabhupada was like that. I mean, unless the exceptions that I know of were one devotee who blasphemed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada said, you will get prema in 10,000 verses. Well, at least he's going to get prema at some point, but Prabhupada was furious, called a snake. And then the devotees who said that Prabhupada was God, and Prabhupada said they should really be thrown out. Of course, what's interesting about that story, Prabhupada took it very literally, and he even put them on a bus and sent them, I think, to Detroit. And they got off the bus, and these four devotees, they had only 25 cents between them. And so when they got off the bus, they had nowhere to go, they lay down on the side of the road to sleep. And they tell the story that the next morning, this is a true story, the next morning some little boy came with some milk and bread and said, my mother saw that you were sleeping on the side of the road and wanted to send you something to eat. And of course, eventually they apologized and then probably took them back. But Krishna won't take away more than we can handle, or give more, just he won't give us more than we can handle. He just won't. Krishna's not going to give us something that's going to hurt us in spiritual life, and he's not going to take away something where the taking away of it is going to hurt us in spiritual life. I mean, Krishna dealt with Arjuna pretty heavily by embarrassing him publicly. But he embarrassed him, it's just so sweet. What a sweet way of being embarrassed. I mean, it's just like really sweet. And Krishna's having this pastime of lifting the hill with one little finger and just letting Indra storm. You know, it reminds me of like when Arjuna let Daksha just yell at him. I'll let you yell at me until you can get out all your anger, you know. So it's like, okay, fine. Sometimes we do this, right? Somebody's angry and we just let them be angry. Just wait. Okay, go ahead, you know. Go ahead and vent. So Krishna's like, go ahead and vent. Send your destructive clouds. Go right ahead. You know, we're all happy here. Like that little children's song. We are happy all together. Everybody's just happy. And according to Kali Karnapur, there was a whole opulent village under the hill. Better than heaven. Better than Indra's heaven. And Rupa Goswami explains that the angle jewelry of the gopis is Chintamani stone. It's really interesting. Rupa Goswami gives evidence for Krishna's quality of all opulent. He gives the evidence of Vrindavan, that the jewelry of the devotees, the sand of Vrindavan, is worth more than anything on any planet or any demigod. And so, I mean, Krishna was taking away Indra's pride by having a festival while Indra's screaming and ranting, you know, hey, we're having a party. And hey, you could join the party if you wanted to. well, it wasn't some terrible, terrible thing that he did. In fact, I think we shouldn't do anything to Indra directly. And Rupa Goswami also gives this example. I forget which one, Krishna's qualities, sorry. I'm sort of surfeited right now with studying Krishna's qualities. But one of the examples was that Krishna first thought, yes, let me destroy Indra and his heavenly planets. And then he thought, he's just insignificant. Why bother? Let me just take care of my devotees, right? Sometimes we may think like that. Somebody's attacking us and ranting and raving. And I just think, it doesn't matter. I don't even need to respond. You know, they're just insignificant. What does it matter? Krishna will take care of them. Like the cowboy voice going into an asura. Krishna will say, so Krishna's like, insignificant. And so he really didn't. Because, as Jiva Goswami's saying, that Krishna understood that if he were to just remove Indra and smash him, that it would break him. Right? I remember Maharaj, you saying this to me about somebody a few years ago. You know, well, I could ask this disciple to do ABC, but if I did, it might break the disciple, so I'm not going to ask them that. I don't want to risk breaking them. I want to deal with them to rectify them. I don't want to break them. Mother Yasoda was thinking about this when she was running after Krishna with a stick. Here, Krishna's talking about how he has a stick. But Mother Yasoda was thinking, you know, if Krishna is so afraid, I don't want him to be so afraid. I don't want to break him.
So she throws away the stick, she ties him up.
So our responsibility is to work with the Lord, not to be so resistant. And this is, we shouldn't resist what Krishna's giving us either. And sometimes I resist what Krishna's giving me. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I want this much responsibility. I don't much. But whatever, to understand that it's love. And understand that whatever Krishna is apparently giving or apparently taking away is that what Krishna is reciprocating with, we're saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, please Lord, engage me in your service, please engage me in your service, please engage me in your service, please give me your devotional service, please give me love of God. And we all say this, right? Everybody says it. Please give me love of God, please give me love of God, please make me one of your associates, give me some eternal service for you. Please help me serve my spirit. You're asking this all of a sudden. He's saying, okay, here, this will help you, and this won't help you. And to accept that, I understand. That's what we are supposed to do. To take everything as love, and to take everything as an adventure. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Maharaj, anything?
No.
Anybody else? Anybody want to add? So are we ready to accept whatever Krishna does? Or are we going to bargain? We're going to bargain, yeah, probably. I'm not going to answer honestly. I'm going to bargain. I'm going to still bargain. But at least we can ask. We can say, Krishna, can you give me enough courage and faith to accept whatever you're going to give and take? Can you get me out of my fear of bargaining? Does he need to bargain? Can you remove my fear and fill me with love, fill me with faith? Yes, Krishna, you want to say?
Really kind of hit me. It was like when he was speaking about this, really hit me up. And he was just like ranting, you know, like he was saying. And meanwhile, Krishna's just there with all his friends, like having a nice time. And it just made me think, like sometimes, like the bottom line where the kids are like throwing a fit, like he was saying, you know, they're distinguishing, well, this was good, but then when you take him home, it's bad. And that, like in my own life, like Krishna's, you know, saying, come, you know, that's a whole party, but I'm like, just like ranting.
Yeah, Krishna's like, come, join the party. And we're just screaming at the table. But she didn't give me this! You took away this! And come, there's a party going on. Hey, why don't you join our party?
I found those examples to be really helpful.
Thank you.
Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai.